Good morning, everyone. I'm going to go ahead and open up the Senate Judiciary Committee. Thank you very much for being here this bright and early Monday morning. I understand we have some special guests here who need to get to school. And because of that, we're going to start with House Bill 2732A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2732A limits the criminal and civil liability for persons who use force to enter a motor vehicle that contains an unattended child or domestic animal. The bill describes the factual circumstances under which immunity attaches and retains liability for gross negligence or reckless, wanton, or intentional misconduct.
All right, thank you. I want to go ahead and call up Kohana Klim and Representative Klim. We got the whole group coming up? Great. We need another chair problem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Brian Klim, State Representative from District 21, and I guarantee you will be more entertained by them than me, so I will not tell you about the bill, but I'll be here for questions.
That'd be very probably more informative, too, right?
Yeah, not just entertained, also educated.
Chair Pruzanski and members of the committee, my name is Kohana Jade Klim. I am the daughter of Representative Brian Klim and Carol Suzuki. I am a member of Girl Scout Troop 10037. I am 9 years old and in the third grade. I live in Salem, Oregon. This is my second time testifying on a bill. I am in favor of House Bill 2732. I want this bill to pass because it will help save children and animals' lives. The bill puts clear rules in place so people will know what to do and know that they are protected by the law. If you see a child or an animal in a dangerous situation and hurting like in a hot car, the rules are, 1, see if the owner of the car is close by, 2, if they are not, check to see if the doors are unlocked, 3, if it is not, first call the police to make sure you have permission to only to break open a window, 4, only break one window, 5, then stay until help arrives. In the United States, there are 7 other states that have passed bills like House Bill 2732 with support from both Democrats and Republicans. They are California, Florida, Massachusetts, Ohio, Tennessee, Vermont, and Wisconsin. I hope Oregon will be the 8th state to make this a law. House Bill 2732 passed 60-0 in the House of Representatives. I hope you will vote in favor of this bill so the Senate can also pass this bill. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you, Kohana. Who would like to go next?
I will.
Okay.
Chair Pruzanski and members of the committee, my name is Zoe Farrell. I'm a member of Girl Scout Troop 10037. I am 9 years old, in the third grade, and I live in Salem, Oregon. This is my second time testifying on a bill. My Girl Scout troop loves helping animals. Last year, we worked to support a nonprofit that helps keep homeless families with their pets. We did this because we feel pets are family, too. When I heard about the idea for this bill, I knew it was something I wanted to support. Today, I'm here to speak on behalf of all animals in Oregon and share my support for this bill. I'm in favor of House Bill 2732A because, 1, I believe no pet should be left in a dangerous situation when help can be provided. 2, I think everyone is worth helping and no one deserves to get heat stroke or die from being left in a hot vehicle. 3, I feel this law could help many animals and allow citizens the steps needed to safely help animals when they are in an agonizing situation without fear for themselves. I urge you to support this bill. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thanks, Zoe. And who's next?
Me. Chair Pruzanski and members of the State Committee. My name is Catherine Lisney. I'm a member of Girl Scout Troop 10037. I'm 9 years old and I am a student at Calpia Elementary in Salem. I decided to get involved with this bill because I like animals, but people don't always take care of them very well. I think that if there's a law about being able to break a window to save a child or a dog or an animal that is in a car, more animals will survive. I also I think that it is all right to break a window of a car to save a baby or an animal or a child if you check with the police first. The owner would be happy you saved his or her pet or child's life. The owner will be very thankful. I'm in favor of House Bill 2732 because pet owners might not realize that it is unsafe for animals to be in cars. They might think that their pet or child will be fine if the window is open. This is still not enough fresh air for animals. I hope that people will keep their pets and children safe. This bill passes. I hope that people will be more responsible with their animals and children. Thank you for allowing me to testify. I would be happy to take any questions.
Well, thank you all for testifying. Let's see if there are any questions. Senator Manning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one comment. If I could have a day to start off perfect, this would be the type of day I would have to start off perfect. Thank you for coming down and providing your testimony and insight. It was very well done. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Ladies, thank you very, very much for coming here. Representative, thank you very much. We have three other distinguished individuals who are going to be testifying on this bill. Not that there aren't others after that, but the next three distinguished ones are Austin, Kevin, and Parker. And guys, I just have to say thank you for letting the girls go first. Who's going to go next? Okay.
Chair Prozanski and members of the Senate Committee. My name is Austin McCleary. I am a member of Cub Scout Pack 122. I am 8 years old and in the third grade, and I live here in Salem, Oregon. This is my first time testifying on a bill. I decided to get involved with this bill because I do not like to think of pets or people dying in hot cars over the summer. It doesn't have to be that warm outside for a car to become dangerously hot inside. Here are some facts. When it's 72 degrees Fahrenheit outside, the temperature inside your car can heat up to 116 degrees Fahrenheit within an hour. I am in favor of House Bill 2732. Because it saves lives. If this bill passes, then children and pets will be safer. Just like my fellow scout is going to talk about today, rolling down windows in 70 degrees Fahrenheit before you leave the car is the best thing. Thank you for allowing me to testify. I would be happy to take any questions.
All right, Austin, thank you very much. We'll take the rest of the testimony, and then we'll see what questions we have. Who'd like to go next? Okay.
Chair Prozanski and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, my name is Parker Hyan. I am part of Cub Scout Pack 122. I am 9 years old and in the third grade, and I live here in Salem. This is my first time testifying on a bill. I decided to get involved with this bill because I do not like to think of people or pets dying in hot cars over the summer. It doesn't have to be that warm outside for a car to become dangerously hot inside. Here's some more facts. When it's 80 degrees Fahrenheit inside or outside, the temperature inside your car can heat up to 99 degrees Fahrenheit within 10 minutes. I'm in favor of House Bill 2732A because it saves life. If this bill passes, then children and pets will be safer. Thank you for allowing me to testify, and I would be happy to take any questions.
All right, Parker, thank you. Kevin?
Hi. Hello, Chairman Pozanski and members of Senate Judiciary Committee. My name is Kevin Marbury. I'm a member of Cub Scout Pack 122. I am 9 years old and I'm in the third grade. I live here in Salem, Oregon. This is my first time testifying on a bill because I do not like to think of pets or people dying in hot cars over the summer. It doesn't have to be that warm outside for a car to become dangerously hot inside. I know this because
I have a dog, and it gets really hot whenever we're going to go eat. And so most of the time I leave him in the house. Some of the time I bring him. We roll down the windows and leave the car on so the air conditioning blows. Also, it's been rolling down the windows has been shown to have little effect on the temperature inside a car. I'm in favor of House Bill 2732A because it saves lives. If this bill passes, then children and pets will be safer. Thank you for allowing me to testify. I would be happy to take any questions.
All right, Kevin, thank you. Gentlemen, thank you very much. For the first time to be testifying, y'all all did really good. Questions or comments? Thank you very much for coming to the Capitol. I'm glad that you were here and gave us some testimony. Thank you. All right, we have four other individuals who want to testify on this bill from my, that have written sign up. Sharon Hammond, why don't you come on up? Glenn Cobb and Scott, why don't you go ahead and come up too? It looks like we have Brian. All right, who would like to continue?
I'll go first. Good morning, Chair Prezansky, members of the committee. My name is Sharon Harmon. I'm the president and CEO of the Oregon Humane Society. And I have to say, I really can't improve upon the testimony that's already been given. But I'm often asked, when I retire, who's going to inherit the Oregon Humane Society? I think we just saw six candidates who could do that handsomely. I'm here in support of House Bill 2732. And I think weather like today really brings in mind the risk that pets and kids face when it's hot out. We're not used to this. We're Oregonians. Where are the clouds? Where are the sun? My dogs and kids always go with me. And we're going to get calls today, and I hope they all end successfully. But with this bill passing, I think we have more tools in the toolbox to make sure no one suffers inadvertently because of the heat. Thank you for your support in this bill.
All right. Thank you. Glenn?
Chair Prezansky, members of the committee, my name is Glenn Kolb. I'm director of the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association, also here in support of House Bill 2732A. You know, a dog's core temperature is higher than ours in humans. It ranges between 100 and 102.5. And as that dog's temperature starts to rise, it starts to pant. It doesn't sweat like we do, so it pants, and through convection, it starts to dissipate that heat. But if it can't dissipate the heat and temperature still continues to rise and it becomes obsessive, the animal can be in trouble. Now, generally between 104, 106 degrees is what considered often is looked at moderate heat stroke. Moderate means help now. It doesn't mean later. It means veterinary care, veterinary treatment now, if that dog's going to be able to recover and possibly survive. And then when it becomes really excessive at 106 degrees, it's likely that that animal's going to perish. There are other factors that can contribute to the harm of the animal that bring this on a little quicker, predisposing conditions such as heart disease, obesity, the age of the animal, it's geriatric, but also whether the animal has breathing issues, breathing concerns. Concerns. You know, signs of heat stroke can include increased heart rate, excessive panting, weakness, lethargy, bright red tongue as opposed to that pink color, then vomiting and diarrhea. And when it does get critical, and it can happen in a very short time, you know, an overheated dog can suffer critical damage to its brain, heart, liver, and nervous system. Essentially, its organs start to shut down. And yet the tragedy of it all, it's avoidable. As we look at it, it kind of reminds me of the adage, love them and leave them. Love your dog, leave it at home on days like this. So we support House Bill 2732A and encourage your support, too.
All right, thank you. Scott.
Thank you, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Scott Beckstead, Senior Oregon Director and Rural Outreach Director for the Humane Society of the United States, here to testify in strong support of House Bill 2732A. We've had some great testimony up till now, so I won't repeat what they have said. But I will say that every summer, I do get calls in my capacity as State Director for the Humane Society of the United States with people wondering what they should do about a car that they're looking at that has a dog in it that's overheating, and it's always problematic because there is always the risk that if they take the necessary action to save that dog's life, they could face some sort of legal consequences. And so this bill really answers that question, provides much needed clarity for situations like that, and so we would urge the committee to support and pass this bill on to the full Senate. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any questions for this panel? Senator Lithicum.
Can you, two of you mentioned that you received calls on this. Can you give us, how many calls in a day, in a monthly period, in whatever time frame is reasonable? How many calls do you receive for incidents like this?
Chair Przanski, Senator Lithicum, and members of the committee, if I could defer that to the person in our cruelty division, she's in the audience, Emily Davidson, would be happy to answer those specific numbers. I think, for us, it's seasonal. We can see when we have a hot summer or a cold winter, our call volume jumps 300 to 400 over the course of a year. Our switchboard normally handles about 2,000 complaints a year of animal cruelty, whether that's abuse or neglect. We are the state's only law enforcement unit dedicated to animal welfare crimes, although every police agency can enforce it. Only the Oregon Humane Society has that ability. But there's law enforcement in every community that does not want to be the last person to the event to see the animals already passed on. We all want to help, and we all want to do something. But for specific numbers, I'm going to let Emily Davidson answer that question. That's okay with you.
We'll call her up in a moment.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Follow up. With regard to that volume of calls, how many individuals have been cited for breaking into a car to free an animal?
Senator Lithicum, Chair Przanski, members of the committee, we're not in the business of citing people for breaking into it. Our statutory authority is limited to violations of the animal welfare statutes.
This bill is specifically with regarding an individual who enters in who shall not be criminally or civilly. So I'm curious what that looks like. How many individuals are actually prosecuted under criminal statute or civil statute?
Yeah, we'll see if we can't get that information, but what Sharon's saying is because they're limited jurisdiction, their component or their agency department doesn't actually have the authority to cite someone for doing that. That would have to be through law enforcement or a civil claim that someone may have brought. We'll see if we can't get that information.
That's fine. I appreciate that you don't know the answer. However, I'd like to request we find that out. I think it's relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And then one last follow-up, if I may, Mr. Chair. In terms of the three of your testimony, it all appears focused on animals and dogs, et cetera. There's an or child clause. I'm curious that nobody has mentioned the health and safety of a child.
Senator Lithicum, Senator Chair Przanski, members of the committees, our organization was founded in 1868 on animals and children, and it certainly is part of our mission. We certainly see the link between the mistreatment of animals and some of our society's most vulnerable, and Oregon statutes often reflect that link. It's really the behavior, not really the victim, and this committee in particular has been supportive of those efforts. We certainly support no person or animal should be harmed because of neglect.
It's nice to hear. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I will just point out, I think our first six presenters did in fact mention children in their presentations. All right, anyone else have any questions for this panel?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Thatcher.
Excuse me. I don't know if it's a question, but just a scenario for something I personally went through. I was on my way to the coast. I have my three dogs in the back. A couple of them were grand dogs, admittedly. But they're in the back of my car. I'm dropping my son off at the train station. He knows exactly what to do. Very capable young man. However, I was called back. They said, Mom, you have to wait with me. So I'm going back. I'm trying to find a parking spot close to the train station. No such thing. I'm having to park way down. I couldn't bring all three dogs in. But I can set the climate in my car. And I was so worried that somebody was going to assume that I was leaving my animals in a hot car, yet I had it set for 69 degrees. And I was monitoring it, making sure it was working. My animals would be laying down probably because they're that way. They're just going to go, huh, okay, yeah, she'll be back. And in those situations where there would be an assumption that, oh, my gosh, you're leaving them in a hot car. On a hot day, it was a hot, sunny day, and they were much cooler in the car, believe me, than they would have been just sitting outside. But I, you know, in situations like that, and with technology improving such that vehicles are capable of having their climate controlled without the engine running, and situations like that, how would one know? How would one assume that an animal is in distress just because it's a hot day and the windows are up?
Glenn?
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Hatcher, committee members, I recognize your question. I think you'd recognize in our view would be that what is that animal? What's the behavior of that animal? Is it panting? Is it showing signs, as we'd mentioned, of excessive panting? Is it prancing around in a vehicle, which often dogs will do because, you know, they're overheated. They want some air. They need to cool down. Those would be some of the signs. If the dogs are calm, our hope is that people would recognize that the dogs appear to be calm and there's no issue.
Any follow-ups?
I don't know. I wouldn't be an expert myself when I walk up to a car and see. Now, child, that's another situation. There's a whole other list of situations there, and I just don't picture somebody getting cited or in trouble for actually doing a good deed and breaking a car if it did look like there was some trouble. I'm not sure that this is necessary, but I do appreciate the intentions. That's why I would kind of like to know if anybody has been cited or, you know, an animal lost its life because the person didn't feel like they were able to go in and break a car window and give relief to that animal or child. And so I guess I would like to know that information at some point.
Chair Brzezinski, can I address some of the questions that have been raised by the two senators? So Chair Brzezinski and Senators Thatcher and Linthicum, I probably take, I would say, between 5 and 10 calls every summer from people that are in the situation and asking sort of what action they can take. And although I don't know that it has happened here in Oregon, I know that there have been other cases where there were children and dogs in the same vehicle in danger of overheating. Probably the case that comes to mind sort of in terms of anecdotally how some cases have been handled down in Roseburg, which is near where I live, there was a case where an older van had been parked in the parking lot outside of a restaurant on one of the hottest days of the entire summer. I believe it was almost 112 degrees that afternoon. And there was a dog in this older van, and the dog was in obvious distress, meaning clawing frantically at the window, barking, panting excessively, clearly in distress, as opposed to recumbent and just sleeping. And a law enforcement officer was contacted, and that law enforcement officer just plain didn't know what to do. And the citizen who contacted myself and the law enforcement officer asked if they could break the window to save the dog. And the officer said, I just don't think we can do that. I think if you did that, I would have to arrest you for breaking and entering or criminal mischief or something. And literally it took the manager of the restaurant going table by table and finding the owner of that dog and making them come out and roll down the window. And actually the guy was extremely irritated, got in his van and drove off, but there were no consequences for him. So, you know, we do know that it happens, and we know that because there is nothing expressly in the law to provide some sort of protection from legal consequences, that a bill like this, I think, gives that kind of clarity. So I don't know if that answers your question, but hopefully it at least helps.
All right. Any other follow-up? Senator Manning.
Mr. Chair, listen to all the testimony, and after reading this this particular bill, I'm understanding this as a Good Samaritan type of a deal. You know, if you're out, you see someone or something that is in peril or in trouble, if you render aid, then you won't be held liable for your actions. And I think in some states, you're also expected to render aid if you come across a situation. I do understand the questions and the concerns that my colleagues have raised on this, but I do recall, as a police officer, I was out and I had one instance where I came across a car that was, a child was in there. The child was unresponsive, knocked on a window, you know, really hard. The child was unresponsive. There was no other alternative but to forcibly enter the vehicle. Which was a good thing because the child was actually not needed medical attention. So there are times where it's not something that occurs all the time. They do happen. And if I was to just walk away and the child would have died, how would I live with myself? So I'm thinking that this bill is something like, if you are a Good Samaritan, you run across a situation particularly, and you choose not to do anything, my question is that could you be held liable for that as well?
No.
Thank you for the short answer.
I mean, based on our current law, there's not a duty and obligation. What this bill is going to do, and I'll just point out on line one, it says if a person has good faith and reasonable belief upon the based on the circumstances that entry into the motor vehicle was necessary because the child or animal was in imminent danger of suffering harm. So they're basically giving that Good Samaritan with certain conditions, that being good faith, reasonable belief, based on the circumstances. But no, there's not a duty and obligation, at least in our current laws, that would require someone to forcibly enter a vehicle to take actions on behalf of a distressed dog or a child. Of course, you would.
Or render aid.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. With that, I'm going to go ahead and ask you all to step back and let's see. You said Emily?
Emily Davidson.
Emily, why don't you come up? And Brian, why don't you also come up while they're coming up? Was there anyone else who wanted to give testimony on House Bill 2732A that did not sign up? So, Brian, before I give you your opportunity to have your testimony, Emily, you've heard the question. Do you have any information that you can share with us?
Sure. My name is Emily Davidson. I'm a staff attorney for the Investigations Department at the Humane Society. And without having the exact statistics in front of me, I would estimate on a day like today during the summer, we could get anywhere between 3 to 5 calls from concerned citizens about an animal in a hot car. And I think during extreme weather events, that's pretty typical for us. Our call volume increases because of weather, extreme weather, and extreme heat is definitely one of those times. And we can get you the exact statistics on that.
And specifically, I don't know if your agency would have it, but do you know of any situations where a person has in fact been cited for damage to a vehicle, either criminally or heard that someone was sued civilly for the damage to a window?
Chair Pozanski, as Sharon mentioned, our authority doesn't extend to that, but I would submit that the statistics on that wouldn't encapsulate the chilling effect that not having that liability protection has on a citizen who might otherwise act on behalf of an animal or child and is hesitant to do so because they aren't protected or they're not sure if they're protected.
All right. Any other questions or comments for Emily? Emily, thank you very much. Brian, why don't you go ahead and give us your testimony?
Thank you, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. My name is Brian Posowitz. I am here today on behalf of an organization called Humane Oregon. We're a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization formed in 2014 to help advocate for animal welfare in Oregon's political process and elections. We submitted written comments, actually, on all of the bills before you today, but in the interest of time, I'm just going to come up here briefly on this particular one. We wholeheartedly support House Bill 2732. From an animal welfare perspective, which is the perspective we represent, this deals most obviously with the situation of a dog trapped in a hot car, and you've already heard all about that, and I don't really have anything to add to those points. We would just say that we think it makes sense to grant this immunity for a private person to intervene in this narrow and limited set of circumstances that are set forth in the bill. And I think most importantly, that set of circumstances includes a good faith and reasonable belief that there is imminent danger of harm. We did make a couple of suggestions. Just we thought the drafting, there's a couple of points that we thought could be clarified or improved in the drafting of the bill. Those are set out in our written remarks, and I'm not going to get into that here. We certainly don't want to do anything to hold this bill up, but there were a couple of points we made if it's practical at all to consider amendments, and I emailed our suggestions to the sponsors as well. Thank you very much for considering my comments.
All right, thank you. Questions for Brian?
I don't. Maybe Senator this Thatcher. Is more for Josh, but does Oregon have good Samaritan laws for rendering aid to, you know, in this situation, in good faith to people or animals, or is it only to people?
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, I'm not aware of any sort of good Samaritan laws out there that impose an obligation.
Well, no, I guess not an obligation. I'm talking about give immunity, you know, from liability, that type of thing, which is kind of like what this bill does.
Senator Thatcher, one thing that does occur to me is on the criminal side, there's a defense called choice of evils, and I would imagine that with the right factual circumstances covered by the bill, you could assert a defense that your decision was the lesser of two evils, i.e. let the dog die and or violate the law. So there might be a criminal defense that would apply.
Yeah, I would support that. And then there are some good Samaritan laws, as you know, for someone rendering aid, yeah. Medical. But I do not know of any as it pertains to animals. Okay. Thank you all very much for coming up. I'll ask once again, is there anyone else who wants to give testimony on 2732A? And not seeing, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing. And I just want
doing it, you have to remain
before the emergency services person.
Before entering the vehicle, blah, 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 remain with the child. I mean, it's a little awkward.
All right, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go ahead and carry this bill over. We are going to look at the suggestions that are in here to see whether or not we think that we wanted to add any more provisions or clarification to the engrossed A version. It is the chair's intention to move the bill, but I think we'll look at this and just make certain we've got it done correctly or to the best of our ability. Any other comments? If not, we're going to go ahead and again, I guess, close the public hearing on 2732A, and we're going to go. We'll carry this one over to next Tuesday, May 30th. So. House Bill 2732A will be scheduled for work session on Tuesday, May 30th. And now we're going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2625A. Josh?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2625A authorizes a county or animal care agency to seek forfeiture of an animal that has been seized pending resolution of a criminal trial, regardless of whether the specific animal is the subject of a criminal charge.
All right. I think that we have five individuals that are signed up at this point to give testimony. So I'm going to go ask Sharon, Emily, and Glenn if you three will come back up. And then we'll take the last two after that.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, I'm Sharon Harmon. I'm the president and CEO of the Oregon Humane Society. We've heard a lot of alphabet soup today of various phrases of humane and Oregon. We're all independent agencies. The Oregon Humane Society is independent of all other animal welfare organizations. We're unique in the state, having been established nearly 150 years ago, with the only law enforcement unit for animal crimes in the state. Forfeiture is an issue that becomes more and more present when we are dealing with cases of 150 or 170 or 245 animals. When these animals are seized, it's on the basis of a search warrant that has probable cause established. There's due process that is afforded along the way. The problem is that when we get to the court, few DAs want to press charges on all 245 parrots, or every one of the 149 dogs, or every one of the 120 dogs and 21 horses. They'll pick a few, and we go forward. In all the cases I have referenced, all of these resulted in a conviction, but some of them have taken almost 2 years. The end result is the same, and the animals spend 2 years, and in case of some of these large breed dogs, they spend nearly 20% of their lives in a shelter that was designed as an adoption facility, but not as a long-term holding facility. I always look at it at the animal, the person who mistreated the animal gets the first crack, and then the system does it the second time by requiring these animals to stay in these confinement. Occasionally, we're able to foster animals out, but for some animals that are so scared, so dangerous, their flight risk, they are not our property, and we need to hold them until the case is adjudicated. And again, 2 years is a very long time for this to reach its conclusion, and I'll let the attorneys speak to the issue of forfeiture in its detail. Thank you.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, again, my name is Emily Davidson. I'm a staff attorney for the Investigations Department at the Oregon Humane Society. We accept no tax dollars and are not affiliated with any local or national animal welfare organization. I'm here today to urge you to support House Bill 2625. In 2008, the Oregonians voted to amend the state constitution to allow for pre-conviction forfeiture of victim animals in criminal cases. And in 2013, the legislature acknowledged that there's a state interest in expediting the disposition of animals that have been seized in these cases, and that's what pre-conviction forfeiture does. Animal care agencies, as Sharon mentioned, are holding these animals for years in most cases, and that's not in the best interest of the welfare for the animal or the resources of the agencies that are caring for them. And the way it stands now, the law says any animal seized with a search warrant, but this bill just makes it abundantly clear what I believe the original intent was, that pre-conviction forfeiture is extended to all animals that were seized with the search warrant, and animal care agencies aren't put at the mercy of a prosecutor who has limited resources and is choosing to only charge 10 animals out of 100, but allows us to get those animals moving through the system so they can move on to the next chapter of their lives. I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you. And Glenn.
Yes, Chair Przanski, committee members. My name is Glenn Kolb. I'm director with the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association here today in support of House Bill 2625A. When animals are seized as part of a neglect or abuse case, veterinarians are at the front line of providing them with the necessary, oftentimes urgent care and treatment. This can be on site, or it can be where the animals are taken, at that location too. We support the bill because it strengthens what we believe is our existing pretrial forfeiture law, and also because it's beneficial to the animals we believe have been harmed. I think others have already commented on maybe more of the legal aspects of it. That's not our bailiwick, so I'll leave my comments here that we do support this bill and urge your support too.
All right, thank you. Questions for this panel? Senator Thatcher.
I'm just trying to, okay, so they, if they don't charge on all the animals, how do they know, and they're just charging on a number, I'm trying to figure out, is that number assigned to that animal, that animal, that animal, or just, you know, five of the aggregate? I mean, what? How does that work?
Senator Thatcher, Chair Przanski, thank you for your question. Each animal Oregon requires to, or each charge Oregon requires to be attached to a specific animal. So it identifies each animal with the charge specifically.
So what's happening is that the prosecutor's office will take, like, say, five out of the 100 and charge those five counts. They won't charge 100 counts. And so what they're trying to do is say for those 95 that aren't individually charged, that they're able to put them through the forfeiture process.
And then my next question might be for DA. Is there going to be somebody coming up?
We have someone from the district attorney's office.
Perfect. Thanks.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you all very much for coming forward.
Thank you.
BJ and Jake, why don't you two please come forward? BJ, I'll let you go first.
Thank you, Chair Przanski and members of the committee. My name is BJ Anderson. I'm the executive director of the Willamette Humane Society here in Salem, and I live in Scio, Oregon. I would just like to add my support for Bill 2625A. The forfeiture would allow, sorry, this is my first time testifying.
It's okay.
Having to hold animals not just at Oregon Humane Society but in shelters throughout the state creates a critical backlog in capacity for our ability to respond to animal welfare needs in the state. When we're holding animals for the very lengthy process of going to trial, to answer Senator Thatcher's question, oftentimes it's the most egregious cases that are chosen for charge in order to have a better chance at conviction. But there are often animals that have suffered and they have to wait until the court process is all done in order for us to rehome them. And as Sharon Harmon said, that's another form of suffering for those animals to not be able to move on in their lives and into homes. So I think that amending this and strengthening this forfeiture law in our state would be a real step forward for animal welfare, and I would urge the committee to support this amendment. Thank you, and I'm open to questions if you have them.
All right, well, let's go ahead and take Jake's testimony first.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Przanski and members of the committee. My name is Jake Kamens. I have had the pleasure to serve for the past 3.5 years as a special prosecutor throughout the state of Oregon, focusing on animal cruelty cases, abuse, and neglect. I have served in this capacity in 21 of Oregon's 36 counties and have assisted Deputy District Attorney, district attorneys, and law enforcement agencies in many of the other counties as well. I've actually been assigned as a special prosecutor to over 125 cases, individual cases of abuse and neglect. I'm here at this point testifying in favor of 2625, and I'm happy to answer any questions about how that process goes currently, as well as how the process, I believe, would go under the bill as proposed. I have actually had this situation occur in a case that I worked on where the prosecuting attorney decided to select animals out of a large number of animals to sort of highlight the behavior of the criminal defendant. This is prosecutorial discretion 101. You know, you don't have to throw every single book that you have at every defendant. And it almost looks like you're trying to, really, really slam somebody when you've got 250 counts, 300 counts, and they're going to get an indictment that's 20 pages long listing every single animal. At the same time, I know that when those animals were seized, that there was probable cause to seize them, that there was, a reasonable belief on behalf of the seizing agency that the animal had been subjected to, in that case, neglect. We got to a forfeiture hearing, and the judge in that case, we put forth all the animals to be forfeited, and the judge in that case said, I do not believe that the law allows me to order forfeiture for animals that are not encapsulated in this charging instrument. And so now we were stuck in a situation where the county, using resources that were well beyond this county's means, was holding animals for which there was no criminal charge pending, so there could be no forfeiture in the future, and the judge has just said, I can't order forfeiture now. And the defendants, for their part, during the pretrial stages of this case, are not allowed to possess animals. So these are not animals that can go back to the defendant's care. These are not animals that can go back to the defendant's care after the trial is done, because presuming that they're convicted of animal abuse or neglect, there's going to be a 5-year ban on their possession of animals. So that leaves these animals just in total limbo. A big part of my job is advising deputy district attorneys. And what I tell them is, at this point, if there's a question about ownership of the animals, that is, if your defendant has not surrendered ownership in the animals, and you have a reasonable basis to, you should charge them with every single count of neglect that is available, because you don't want to be in that same position. And I'd be happy to take any questions about this issue.
All right, thank you. Senator Lithicum?
Just a curiosity, in the anecdotal case you just recited, how many animals were we discussing?
Senator Lithicum, Chair Przanski, I believe that it was close to 200, and the prosecuting attorney, I actually co-chaired on that case, and the district attorney that brought the case to grand jury came out of grand jury with, I think, 40-odd charges of animal neglect.
And what type of domestic animal are we describing?
In that case, Senator Lithicum, it was a cattle ranch, so it was head of cattle, bulls and steers and cows.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you all very much for coming forward. And is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on 2625A? Not seeing anyone. We'll go ahead and close the public hearing. We have the paperwork. We'll open up a work session on House Bill 2625A.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2625A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves House Bill 2625A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
I still have some questions, so I'm going to be a no for now.
Okay.
I also feel like in this example, 200 cattle, the price of cattle today is an enormous economic impact. Prior to final disposition, I don't think we have the right to step in and do that. I realize there's potential criminal activity going on and negligence charges pending, but if that slate comes clean, I don't see how we can justify doing this.
All right. Any other comments? So the motion before us is to move House Bill 2732A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. At this point, it appears that Senator Thatcher is reserving or giving a no at this point, and Senator Lithicum is also a no.
We're 2625.
Did I say the wrong number? Okay, I apologize. It's 2625A. Yeah, I'm looking at the wrong sheet. So is there any other objections to the motion? Not seeing any. Motion carries. Chair will carry House Bill 2625A to the floor. We'll close the work session, and we'll open up the public hearing on House Bill 3177.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3177 authorizes the seizure and forfeiture of hens and chicks associated with cockfighting.
All right, I have Sharon and BJ scheduled for this one. While they're coming up, is there anyone else who wants to give testimony on House Bill 3177? All right, And who'd like to lead off on this one?
Okay. Members of the committee, Chair Brzezinski, my name is Sharon Harmon. I'm the president and CEO of the Oregon Humane Society here in support of House Bill 3177. This bill allows for all birds within a cockfighting operation to be considered fighting cocks or fighting birds. What has happened in the past is we've had to be really selective about those birds that are actively used in fighting. They have their wattles cut off, their spurs, their spurs adjusted so they can be fitted with gaffs. And when it's all said and done and the convictions are handed down, we're only able to remove the actual fighting birds. And what we've done is left them with the starter kit of the hens, the chicks, the juvenile roosters, and it really doesn't solve any problem at all. The recent case in Washington County involved over 1,200 birds. Second time this facility has been busted for cockfighting. This was a 20-agency interdisciplinary effort to resolve the situation. Several months later, when it's all said and done, the judge orders that we can destroy the fighting birds, which are the roosters, but we left them with several hundred hens and chicks, and we didn't solve any problems at all. A few guys went to jail. The vast majority came back out of from wherever they were and were able to pick up the pieces. All the cages were there. All the birds were there. It was as if they'd only been set back. This bill is really common sense. Cockfighting is a cruel blood sport. Roosters are fitted with gas and knives and thrown into a ring, and as the roosters do, they fight, slash, and stab each other to death. It's not pretty. It's not humane. It has no place in society, and the best we can do is to put them out of business by destroying all the animals. There's no rehabilitation for fighting cocks. There's no rehabilitation for the hens. They've often been fed drugs and other substances to make them aggressive. They're not food animals. It's a sad situation, and I'm unfortunately to be here to advocate for those animals to be destroyed, but it's the best we can do given the circumstances we're handed. Thank you. I hope you'll join me in support of this bill.
All right. Thank you. BJ?
Thank you, Chair Brzezinski and members of the committee. My name is BJ Anderson. I'm the executive director of Willamette Humane Society here in Salem, and I live in Scio. I'm here really to support everything Sharon is saying about this. We understand a lot in the world about dogfighting, but we tend to forget that cockfighting exists and in many ways exists more easily and more widespread. And it's brutal. And exactly what she's saying, I keep chickens myself, and I know how fast those chicks grow, and I know how many of them can turn into roosters. So, and I have seen in my volunteer time at Lighthouse Farm Sanctuary, I have seen the nature of these jungle chickens. They are very aggressive by nature, and they fight each other brutally. Even when we try to save them and provide them with humane housing. So I absolutely encourage this committee to support this, taking out this loophole in a brutal, brutal criminal sport.
All right, thank you. Questions for the panel?
Well, I don't know if it's a question for them or if we're going to have any more testimony. I don't know. Do you know what other states do? Is this kind of practice among other states?
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Thatcher, when I was a state humane officer in California, we were able to destroy all birds in the flock. 40 states have recognized that cockfighting is a felony crime, as is Oregon. I hope that answers your question.
A little bit, yeah.
All right. Senator Lithcom?
Potentially not a question for the two of you, although you may know. On this 3177, the summary includes amends existing offense with a year's imprisonment, fine, et cetera, but I don't see that in the text of the bill itself.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lithcom, I think we're looking at Section 5. which describes the crime of forcible recovery of a fighting bird. So the other sections in the bill authorize law enforcement to constructively seize. So in the Washington County example, there's 1,200 birds. They're in cages. Law enforcement can go in and say, these are ours now, even though they don't move them. And then if the defendant were to fiddle with that, that's the classic felony. And as you'll see in Section 5, it just adds source bird and alleged fighting bird into the current language.
Okay. Okay. Thank you for the explanation.
All right. Ladies, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony on 3177? Not seeing, we're going to go ahead and close the public hearing. And we have paperwork.
We do.
We'll open up a work session on House Bill 3177.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3177 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves House Bill 3177 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Yes, I have a question for Josh. This is post after conviction or just after charge or what?
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Thatcher, I believe.
Well, what is the current law? I mean, I guess.
It is both. So current law, it doesn't change the process under current law. It just includes hens and chicks with the fighting birds. But to answer your question, there's a, I think it's both. So Section 2 authorizes the court to seize. Section 3 includes the penalty associated with conviction. And Section 4 is the constructive possession. So the constructive possession occurs
after conviction.
Pre-conviction. That's when when they go in and they arrest the guys and there's all these birds running around.
Yeah, instead of moving 200 birds from their cages and everything, they basically just take control.
Constructive. That's what the constructive means. Okay.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Any objections to the motion that's before us? Not seeing any. Motion carries. Senator Manning, will you be the carrier on this bill? So this Senator Manning carry House Bill 3177. We'll close the work session on 3177. Open up a public hearing on House Bill 3283A.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 3283A addresses two distinct animal welfare issues. First, the bill increases the length of time from 5 to 15 years that a person convicted of felony animal neglect may not possess an animal of the type that was neglected. The bill also authorizes the court to reduce the 15-year ban on animal possession if the defendant successfully completes a mental health treatment program approved by the court. The second change made by House Bill 3283A addresses criminal cases in which a government agency or a humane investigation agency receives donations to assist with the care of seized animals. The bill provides that the court may not reduce the amount of restitution owed by the defendant based on these donations. Finally, there is a Dash A2 amendment before you today. The A2 amendment classifies parrots as domestic animals rather than as livestock for purposes of the animal abuse and neglect laws. With the Dash A2 amendments, House Bill 3283A has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
All right. Thank you. We have four people that have signed up. John Hopkinson and Sharon want y'all to come up first. And while they're coming up, the next two is BJ and Jake. Besides those two, is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony that hadn't signed up? Sharon?
Chair Brzezinski and members of the committee, I'm Sharon Harmon. I'm the president and CEO of the Oregon Humane Society. We are an independent animal welfare organization, and we receive no tax money, which is really important within the scope of this bill. What this bill does is it brings felony animal neglect up to the same level of penalty all of the other animal felony level crimes are, like dogfighting, like animal cruelty, like malicious killing and torture of animals, up to the 15-year penalty. But there's a caveat in there that allows discretion to drop that down to a 5-year prohibition of ownership. And really, that's a nod to the issue of animal hoarding. You know, often when we see neglect cases involving 100, 200, 94 cats, It's really more hoarding in many cases, not all. Some is definitely malicious. In other cases, we just need to recognize that mental health solutions are probably the best way to go with that. So it allows the courts to say if you've completed mental health treatment program, then it can be dropped down to 5 years, and those are probably the same time period to do that. The second part allows for to make sure that a defendant isn't self-enriched by their crime. For us, if we do cite someone for animal cruelty and then we get donations for our doggy dash last weekend, often we've had defendants say, well, you've made enough money that I don't have to pay restitution, and the two are separate. The defendant shouldn't be self-enriched by our activities to fund our organization in having a lesser penalty meted out. And the third part involves parrots. Not sure how parrots got to be commercial livestock, but in most, from vast majority cases, parrots are singular or they're companion animals. Even in the case where it was 245 parrots for us last year, these were companions. There was no commercial enterprise associated with it. And while we can use the neglect statutes, it's a good animal husbandry is a pretty broad broad category of exemption for the animal cruelty statute. So we'd like to bring parrots like parakeets and cockatiels and Amazons and cockatoos into the companion animal realm for the purpose of neglect the neglect statutes. And that, I support House Bill 3283. Hope you'll join us.
All right, thank you. John?
Good morning, Chair Przanski and members of the committee. My name is John Hopkinson. I am here in support of House Bill 3283. I work for the Investigations Department of the Oregon Humane Society, which is not affiliated with any local or national organization and does not receive tax funding. I work in a legal capacity for the Investigations Department for about 2 years now, so I've been to nearly all of our criminal cases that have gone to trial that we are involved in, and we have statewide jurisdiction, so I've been all across the state, and the facts vary greatly and the animal victims vary greatly, but one common occurrence that I've noticed is a line of questioning about from the defense about our funding, and it can be a little bit frustrating because it's insinuating that we have a financiary motive that a financial motive that to execute, you know, what we have a mandate to do. So, you know, this is not true. We spend an immense amount of resources on these cases, upwards of hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, my role is really unique in that I get to be, I have the privilege of bearing witness to the entire case from start to finish. So I assist on search warrant executions, and I get to, you know, place my hands on the actual animal victims and experience their living conditions. And then I, you know, get to watch animals recover under the supervision of our medical team. And if they have behavior issues, we have a great training staff, and our customer care works to place the animal in their forever home. So I every day get to see how much money and how much time and effort we spend in rehabilitating these animals. I also find it to be not really relevant to the case, and often I feel like it's used as a distraction to, you know, to distract from the defendant's actual conduct. So I think if we had something to point to that at least acknowledges that, you know, our fundraising is not, can't take away from our restitution, you know, would help and kind of, you know, reducing the amount of line of questioning about, you know, what our fundraising and what we're doing for our cases. The second component that I want to talk about is the increase of felony neglect to 15 years from 5 years. And, you know, like it's been said, 15 years is already the possession ban on felony abuse. So this just puts neglect into that category. And there's a couple ways in which neglect becomes a felony, and the most common is if it involves 11 or more animals. And the type of neglect that involves 11 or more animals are mass breeding facilities like puppy mills. And those people really have the existing facilities and infrastructure to just hit the ground running after those 5 years. So it's like basically a minor setback. So I think it's really important for those cases. And then people who are living with the experience of hoarding animals are also neglecting animals on a large scale, and they have a very high rate of recidivism. So also extending the 15 years is important for those cases as well. And then, the, like Sharon said, the amendment acknowledges the mental health component that's involved in animal hoarding. So, you know, if they receive treatment, they can reduce that. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, and thank you for hearing me out this morning.
Thank you. Questions for either of the panelists?
Maybe not for them. I'm just throwing it out there. I was just trying to tease out what was the difference between the original bill and then the amendment. And I guess the amendment allows the court to reduce
parrots.
15, and add, oh, adds the parrots. That's all the amendment.
That's the A2.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So going back to the parrots, so does that harken back to a scenario in which parrots are raised for their feathers, and that would be the commercial enterprise? I don't know that we do that here. I know in some countries that may happen.
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Dembrough, I'm not aware of the rationale how parrots got included. Citizens, broad category of birds got included into it. If I may, Chair Brzezinski, one of the issues about restitution, we're rarely awarded restitution, and in the rare cases that we are awarded it, it's almost never the defendant pays it. These cases are extraordinarily expensive to reconcile. So there's a great variance between what the court orders for restitution, what the true costs are, and then to say that a defendant has no obligation for restitution on the basis that we've had a fundraiser in the last week, it's really unfortunate. These cases often cost several hundred thousand dollars, and I'm not exaggerating, to resolve when you have hundreds of animals. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. I have two other people that are scheduled to testify. BJ and Jake, want you to come back up. BJ, why don't you go ahead and go first?
Okay. Thank you, Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee. My name is BJ Anderson. I'm the executive director of Willamette Humane Society here in Salem, and I live in Scio, Oregon. Willamette Humane Society is also an independent, a nonprofit. We raise our own money, and we are just finishing right now. We've just finishing up our fiscal year and our budgeting process, so I can tell you that as a nonprofit, we budget very, very carefully. We raise all our money locally in the community. The majority of our funds come from individual donors in our community. In that budget, we don't have it for the occasional case where we end up having to care for a number of animals while they go through a trial process. As it's been stated, it's very expensive. About 7 years ago at the Humane Society, I was involved in a case that involved nearly 40 horses and a number of dogs and a couple of cats and two rabbits. Those were all seized, and we had to house and care for them until the courts decided the outcome for these animals, those that we were unable to find their rightful owners. I know how expensive that was for the organization, and it's not something that we had in the budget. I also know that when the defendant was found guilty, restitution was awarded as a punishment, as it is in the legal system, and the Humane Society has not seen a dime of that restitution. That's not uncommon. That's the norm. So when we fundraise for the animals, we're in it for the animals. So I definitely
support this amendment. And in addition, we have taken in parrots over the years, and like cats and dogs, they are not livestock. They are not bred for meat or product like wool or milk, and they're not eaten as a rule in our culture. So they are kept as companion animals. They have long, intelligent lives, and I absolutely support their inclusion as companion animals in this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Jake?
Thank you. Chair Przanski, my name is Jake Kamens. I have had the pleasure to serve for the past 3.5 years as a special prosecutor throughout the state on animal cruelty, abuse, and neglect cases. I'm here today in support of House Bill 3283. I want to take it one piece at a time. First, this 5 and 15 year distinction. Animal neglect is the only felony level animal cruelty charge that still falls under the 5-year ban in the law. And the way that this works is ORS 167332 makes it a crime for a person who has been convicted of animal cruelty offenses to possess certain types of animals for either 5 years or 15 years. And generally speaking, the distinction is the misdemeanors you get 5 years, the felonies you get 15 years. Animal neglect as a felony is the exception to that rule. Animal neglect was turned into a the crime of animal neglect as a felony was created in 2013. Senate Bill 6 was a huge a package of animal cruelty laws. And when it was made into a felony, the legislature also saw it fit to rank it as a level 6 on the crime seriousness scale. Just to give you some context, assault of a public safety officer and unlawful use of a weapon are other level 6 crimes. So this is, you know, the legislature taking it very seriously. However, it's still only a 5-year ban. And I think that's inappropriate based on the level of seriousness of these crimes. I'm also supportive of this issue of potentially reducing the 15 years back down to 5 years with appropriate mental health treatment. One of the things that I've found in my cases is that it's difficult to get mental health treatment ordered, even in good situations, and it's even more difficult to get a convicted defendant to participate in that mental health treatment. And I think this would be an incentive both for sentencing courts and for defendants to actually take advantage of mental health treatment that can help people work through issues which may end up with them having, for example, 43 cats in a one-bedroom apartment or 17 dogs in a tiny duplex. So I'm supportive of that as well. This donation issue, I did want to speak to that because, as the people who've testified before have noted, restitution, it's almost a legal fiction. It's rare that I've seen it fully ordered on an animal cruelty case. It's rarer that I've seen it fully paid on an animal cruelty case, despite the fact that typically it's ordered as a condition of probation. And of course, there are obvious financial issues across the board, and it's difficult to pay these things back. This also harkens back, by the way, to strengthening the pretrial forfeiture rules so that, you know, the money that's spent on these animals can be stopped at an earlier stage. But I would point out that even under this amendment, the court is the ultimate arbiter of how much is ordered to be paid. The only thing that this would change is that the court wouldn't be allowed to consider arguments of, well, this agency, this, you know, nonprofit agency rakes in the donations. If there's one thing that I've learned working around the state on animal cruelty cases, it's that Oregon loves its animals. You know, we've got big hearts, and when it comes to supporting these nonprofit agencies, Oregonians do a lot in that realm. But that should not take away from the actual specific cases where money has been spent and they don't get that money back.
I'm supportive of the parrot issue as well. I wanted to just shed a little bit of light on why that actually matters. In the animal neglect statute, it requires a person who's in charge, custody, or control of an animal to provide that animal with what's called minimum care. Minimum care is generally defined as care sufficient to preserve the health and well-being of an animal. But then it goes down a list of specific things that you have to do. And it's what you would imagine, food of sufficient quantity and quality to allow for normal growth or maintenance of body weight, potable water in sufficient quantities and open access to that potable water. When it comes to livestock animals, there's no specific law that requires, as part of minimum care, for an owner to provide a livestock animal with shelter. So conceivably, you know, you could make an argument that parrots and these other birds that fall under this genus or whatever it is aren't required to be provided with adequate shelter. Now, I don't think anybody would straight-facedly make that argument, but it could weaken the state's position in an animal neglect case involving parrots that were not provided with adequate shelter, among other things. And I'm happy to take any questions from the panel.
All right, questions? Jake, thank you. BJ, thank you very much. I'm going to go ahead and just check one more time. Was there anyone else who wanted to give testimony on 3283A? Not seeing it. We'll close the public hearing. And we need the A2s on this one. And are we ready to work it? If we are, I'm going to go ahead and open a session on House Bill 3283A.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash A2 amendment to House Bill 3283A.
Senator Thatcher moves the dash A2 amendments into House Bill 3283A. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3283A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves House Bill 3283A as amended by the A2s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
I think I'll hesitate, so you can put me down as a negative until I research further.
Okay. Any other comments?
For now until he convinces me otherwise, I guess. I don't know.
All right. With that, motion passes. Senator Denborough, will you be the carrier of 3283A?
Sure.
And we'll close the work session. And we're going to go ahead and I'm going to go ahead and close for now. Brian, I'd like to talk to you off camera since you're still here. And with that, we're adjourned for today, and we're back here at 8:15 tomorrow. Thank you. Thank you.